everyone. Bray County Board of County Commissioners meeting will now reconvene. Jeff Hart.
Thank you, Board. My name is Sean Gephardt. I'm with the Nevada Department of Agriculture. I am the noxious weeds coordinator for the department. I have been with the department for about 15 years in the EPA program and was a noxious weed coordinator for the last three. What is a noxious weed? A lot of people ask that question. It's any species of plant which is likely to be difficult to control, a public nuisance, or detrimental to safe such things as agricultural yields. Noxious weeds are brought in through seeds, feeds, and ornamental plants. Of the roughly 2,000 noxious weeds that are listed on the federal level, 80% of those have been brought in through the ornamental horticultural industry. This picture right here is one specific. I remember selling this in the early 90s. This is called purple loosestrife, and this riparian species is just about taking over a large part of Spark Boulevard. I don't know if you live, anybody lives up there, of course, the golf courses out in Pyramid Lake. But they're already starting to find this in the Truckee River, and we're concerned that it's going to end up in Pyramid Lake as well. This can get about 6 feet tall and produce about 2 million seeds a year. The Nevada Department of Agriculture has been given the authority to designate weeds as noxious. How this works is that we look at data collected from bordering states to determine if they have their noxious weeds are encroaching on some of our properties. That process is very lengthy. We have a workshop, then we go to hearing, and then we go to the Legislative Council Bureau, and then once it's adopted through legislative means, that requires that plan is listed in state statute as a noxious weed. Of our 54 currently noxious weeds, we have them broken down into A, B, and C categories, and what those categories represent is A, rated species are ones that have not been identified yet but are encroaching from bordering states. A B-rated weed is a weed that's found in maybe one or two counties in small infestations. And then a C-rated weed is one that we find in every county throughout the whole entire state. In state statute, a noxious weed, if you have it on your property, it declares every person owning, controlling, or occupying lands in the state and every county shall control all weeds declared noxious. I like to preface by pointing out the word control. Although we would like to see some level of eradication for an A-rated species since it's not widespread, we realize that in some C-rated species, eradication is not realistic and feasible. So I like to really hit on the word control. And what I mean by that is that you do your best not to allow it to go into your neighbor's property. And a large part of my job is to educate the homeowners on the most efficient and financially best option available to control that species of weed. This is just kind of a small snapshot of some of the weed data that we have collected. We're using the EdMap system, which is simply a cell phone app where people, if they see a noxious weed, if they can take a picture of it, it gets uploaded into a larger database, recording a GPS location, and then I look at the photograph to verify that yes, indeed, that is a noxious weed, and then it goes into a larger system. And this is some of the breakdown that we have. An A-rated weed is yellow star thistle. Some of the B-rated weeds is spotted knapweed, Dalmatian toe flax. C-rated weeds are scotch thistle and the musk thistle. This is a pie chart kind of representing visually some of the distribution that you have. You can see the perennial pepperweed, or a lot of people have mentioned already, the tall white duck is one that's widespread, as well as the scotch thistle. The scotch and musk thistle, these are biennial plants. They can get between 3 to 12 feet tall. And what I mean by biennial plants is that it takes 2 years to mature into a viable seed. So the first year, it creates the vegetative growth. It'll go dormant in the wintertime, and then the second year it comes up and it sprouts these big, tall, purple flowers that you see frequently along the side of the road. Because it is a biennial, it takes 2 years to achieve seed production. manual or mowing, it can be an effective means of control without applying herbicide. However, you know, 2,4-D and Roundup works effectively on it as well. If you do decide to do it manually, you are going to have to get down below the crown of the weed to make sure you get that fleshy top root up. But once that's out, that's no longer going to produce any more flower seed. And the one that I really wanted to come here to talk about today is the yellow star thistle. This annual weed is one that I believe strongly is a major contributor to the wildland fires that you're having in California now. This, I brought in a sample, and I'm not going to pass it around because we don't want to spread anything around, but I did bang it out to make sure that there was no seed development on there. But this is an example of what yellow star looks like. This is an annual leaf, so this all dies off once it reaches about this point. I have seen it to be about this tall, but this is kind of on average of what it looks like at a mature height. But it's very thick in the field, and it has these very spiny thorns underneath the flowers, so walking through it is very unpleasant. What makes it also difficult to control is that most of the leaf tissue is down in the rosette stage. You can see that once it starts to bolt, there's no leaves. And because there's no leaves, there's no stomates for the chemical to get absorbed into the plant to kill it off. What we also find troubling about it is that when you try to mow it with a lawnmower, the plant will literally start to grow prostrate underneath the mower blades, which makes it even doubly hard to control it. If you do control it with herbicide, which you can do with 2,4-D, you're probably going to have to make about 2 to 3 applications throughout the season to get some control. But we're seeing this already widespread in Washoe County in Reno, and we're also seeing it widespread in Dayton. So why I'm here today is inevitably yellow star thistle is going to be right here in Virginia City. So if you start to see it, really be diligent about taking it out. So what does the state do to help with the counties? Well, we have seasonal inspectors that can go out and do survey work. Here's one of my seasonal inspectors looking at a patch of Medusa head, which grows very thick with cheatgrass. This was just found on the other side of the freeway from Cabela's. And Medusa head grows a very thick layer of thatch, which has to be removed to get down to the new growth for chemical control. We also have mapping systems that we can generate maps for counties. We also have prioritization, and that's why we list the A, B, and C categories. Back then, when Kenny Glenn was the governor and we had more funding in the coffers, he set aside $100,000 into what was referred to as a weed abatement cost share program. And it's a revolving account, and how this program works is that if the county or the state are finding a property that is neglecting to address the sufficient infestation of a noxious weed, the county can step in and do an abatement. But with this funding, the state will pay the county in upwards of 80% of the cost to do the abatement. However, the county has to be willing to put a lien on that property so that in the event that that property is sold, then the state will be reimbursed and put back into that revolving account. It's a good program. Douglas County is using it, and they've never had to actually move forward with a lien, but we do fund them the cost to do the abatements periodically. We also have a biocontrol program. So there's a lot of people that are opposed to using chemicals, such as Roundup right now. A lot of people are concerned with the use of Roundup, even though EPA did come out and say that it's not carcinogenic. There is still a lot of concern, and we recognize that. We as an agency, me as a noxious weed coordinator, cannot force you to control your weeds with a herbicide. There are options available, and one of them is biocontrol agents. How this works is a bug that you can release on a list of noxious weeds that we have, and then that bug is host specific to that plant, and at some level will reduce the density or the spread of that weed. It won't kill off the infestation entirely because that would kill off itself, but it is effective in means of reducing the density of the plant. We also have funding through the U.S. Forest Service to help create cooperative weed management associations, and currently with the help of Kathy Canfield, I have started what is referred to as the Washoe Story Cooperative Weed Management Association. So here today I'm inviting people to attend those meetings if they're interested in that. And we're on the verge of getting all the paperwork in order to be classified as a nonprofit. Once that association gets established, they can apply for the federal dollars available to do weed abatement work within Washoe and Story counties. The counties can also become classified as a weed district, and the benefit of a weed district is that it places them in state statute so that in addition to the noxious weeds that are on the state list, if the county was interested in adding a new species to the list, say something kochia or something like that, they could do that, but they would have to be put on in state statute as a weed district. A lot of farming communities do that. And then I mentioned the EdMap system. And for the people that are here today or the county commissioners, if they're interested in noxious weeds on their properties, how the app works is that on your cell phone, you can download the EdMaps West or the EDD Maps on your phone. You'll have an app there. And then when you open the app, it automatically takes your GPS coordinates. And then you take a picture of the weed, and it goes to me in approximately 8 different verifiers throughout the state so that they can look at the weed to determine yes or no that is a noxious weed. Why that's important to us is that way it helps us to determine if we're having any new spread of additional species throughout the state. It also takes a snapshot of the whole entire nation because other states are using that system so we can see what weeds are coming in from bordering states. So with the funding that the counties give to the road departments and the parks departments and the open spaces, they're able to purchase herbicides, personal protective equipment, storage, equipment, and personnel. And without the counties, I couldn't do my job effectively, so that's why I'm here today to really appreciate the funding that's set aside to do those weed abatement work. And why be concerned with noxious weeds? Well, it definitely is going to contribute to fire hazard. As you can see here, just looking at this, once this dries up, this is going to be a significant fire concern. And it's also going to eliminate wildlife habitat. Seven of our noxious weeds are aquatic species, so it's going to have an impact on water quality and clarity. And it's also expensive. Because the more noxious weeds that we neglect to address down the line, the larger the infestation is going to get. So that's why the cost is also there. And important to us is also the impact on agriculture. The agricultural impact is exponential in terms of noxious weeds. And that's my presentation today.
Great. Mr. Gephardt. Commissioners, have any questions? Sean?
If possible, if I can get that PowerPoint presentation, that'd be great.
Sure.
That's the only question I got.
Yeah, you can. Sure.
Yeah, thank you.
That'd be good for the HOA.
Yep.
Yeah, that's good. Can we follow up on this?
Sure.
Do you have any follow-up? I got one question. Ready? Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's your opinion on goats? People in the area, including in this county, have rented goats and, I guess, give a goats for non-rent. Do they sometimes spread seeds when they eat in one area and come up to another area and give as much as they take?
I think that's a possibility, but that's not really what I've seen it's used. I've seen goats be very effective ways of control as long as you incorporate it with revegetation afterwards. A lot of the tribal reservations use goats, and I found it to be very successful because there are a lot of them are opposed to using herbicides. But as long as they incorporate some seeding afterwards, it's very effective. Yeah. And also on our website, on our noxious weed page within the Nevada Department of Ag's website, we have a goat grazing list of people that you can hire professional goat grazers from, or you can just call me and I can give you a list of people. So. And, so I also have some business cards that I'll just go ahead and I can give to Kathy so that she wants to. Again, I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Nicole, can I ask you to turn the lights back on? Thank you. Thank you for your presentation today. Thank you for taking the time to come up and see us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll just follow up on that.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. I'll do it quickly. We have, since 2008, we have an interlocal agreement with Dayton Valley Conservation District, thanks to this board, doing those interlocal agreements year by year. And we started a noxious weed abatement program, particularly for Whitetop in Six Mile Canyon, where it started, and then Seven Mile Canyon, then expanded to all of Gold Hill, American Flat, Virginia City, and pretty much the whole Carson River watershed side of the county. So that program is up and running and yearly doing very well through their interlocal agreement. Thanks to Kathy Campfield, she is doing the same exact thing with which Mr. Gephardt explained on the Truckee River watershed side, and through the Highlands will be the start, probably a mile at a time. Kathy's got a great program getting going here with this team. And then ultimately through all the entire Highlands and down to Lockwood, Rainbow Bend, and along the River District. So it's a lot of work putting these together. Seems like once they get going, then they're on their way. But just getting them started is pretty tough. Thank you, Kathy, and thank you, Mr. Gephardt. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Austin, for that little refresher for us. It's good. It's, I know we forget about it over a period of time. Next on our agenda is discussion of possible action. Possible approval of design fee proposals from Dubay Architectural Group and Far West Engineering for Architecture, HVAC, Electrical, Structural, and Civil Design Services relating to the proposed tenant improvements work at 800 South C Street, Virginia City, Nevada, for the provision of the county facilities, including the Justice Court. Mr. Northam.
Thank you, Commissioners. Mike Northam, Operations Projects Coordinator. You're all familiar with the Divide Building Purchase Offer. The reason bringing these before you now is we want to get these authorized so that we're ready to move as quickly as possible due to the significant time constraints on this project. I would just say that by authorizing these proposals, it doesn't obligate the county right off the bat. There would need to be an official notice to proceed issued from my office for them to start work on this. But that is the intent of bringing these before you at this time.
I guess it should also mention that we use both of these companies for a lot of work that we've done in the past, especially Far West Engineering. I guess we call them the record, the engineers of record for Story County. Pete Dubay has done a lot of work.
Multiple successful projects with them, yes, sir.
Yeah. Commissioners, have any questions for Mike?
I don't.
Nope. We open up for public comment regarding this item. Anything for you, Dad?
I don't think so. I think Mike's got it, and everything here is pretty self-explanatory.
All right. Can we get a motion to approve this item?
Hi, Lance Gilman. Move to approve the design fee proposal from Dubay Architecture Group and Far West Engineering for architecture, HVAC, electrical, structural, and civil design services relating to the proposed tenant improvements at 800 South C Street for the provision of county facilities to include the Justice Court.
All right. You have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Moving in second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along to item number 13, discussion of possible action, consideration and possible approval of a contract to purchase the Virginia City Freight Depot, which should be probably the Virginia Truckee Freight Depot, and the adjacent properties in Virginia City, Nevada, from David Pierce Powell and Kerry Ward for a cash purchase price of $695,000. So, I'm bringing this forward. There's a long history with the depot. Goes back more than 40 years ago that I've known Pierce Powell, and he would loan his facility and property to the fire department here in Virginia City to utilize the depot for our annual fireman's muster. We would hire the United States Navy Band out of San Francisco to perform there. We'd have a dance and a barbecue and all kinds of things. We did that for several years. And so we've had an ongoing relationship with Mr. Powell for those years. I've been friends with his partner, Terry Ward, for about the last 20 years. Terry is a real rail enthusiast himself, has attended many, many railroad commission meetings in Carson City. The county has had an interest in purchasing the depot for several years. It goes back to when the county wanted to go ahead and open Tunnel 6 in front of St. Mary's. If you're going to open the tunnel, you need a depot to bring the train to. The recession followed suit, and the tunnel project was put on hold. Still working on the depot item, though, was the county. Had two appraisals made on it. They had one appraisal, and the sellers didn't like it, so they had a second appraisal, which they liked even less because it came in lower. So the county went ahead and took the average of the two, made an offer to the owners, and that offer was rejected. So as time has gone on, after I was elected in 2012 and took office in 2013, I went ahead and started negotiations with the owners of the property once again. And so now here we are 6 years later, many hours of negotiation, and the owners of the property have come to a resolution that they're prepared now to sell the depot and the surrounding property to the county. And so that's where we are. I was hoping Pierce was going to be here today. I was going to make light of the fact that he and I went to high school together, but that would have been a little bit of a stretch. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to read my staff report on this first, and then I'll open up for discussion with the board and then with the public. So, after lengthy discussions, the present owners of the V&T Freight Depot, located on three parcels west of the property known as the Silverland Hotel, have decided to sell the property to the county, subject to the board approval. The total cash selling price requested is $695,000. The properties were most recently appraised for $635,000. Additionally, $60,000 in addition value has been calculated, representing the commitment of a water and sewer hookup that was never installed, as well as the acquisition of certain personal property defined in Article 2 of the purchase agreement. As a freight depot, scales, and office furniture will bring the total purchase price to $695,000. Story County has long been interested in acquiring the BC Freight Depot and surrounding properties for a multitude of reasons, including, as evidenced by our ownership of the historic Fourth Ward School, the Fire Museum, the Courthouse, Piper's Cottage, Piper's Opera House, the Ice House, and Gold Hill Depot, and St. Mary's Arts Center, Story County has a solid track record of acquiring and owning historic buildings in town, with the goal being to preserve, protect, and eventually enhance the cultural value. The Freight Depot certainly qualifies, and assuming successful acquisition, we would intend to commission a state historic structures report that would provide a roadmap to prioritizing steps towards preservation. At a glance, these would seem to be to include re-roofing the depot and installing a fire suppression system. The adjacent parcels offer great opportunities for additional parking. Despite uninformed criticism, such as we don't need more parking, like we encountered when acquiring the properties that are now the courthouse parking lot, it is common knowledge to those truly familiar with the town that you can almost never have too much parking. Just this past Thursday, I walked the courthouse lot, and it was almost totally full. Additionally, parking lots have consistently proven to provide the added benefit of hosting venues such as the Firemen's Musters and, more recently, Women with Wheels. Once renovated, the depot building will provide a unique in-town venue for special events, including weddings, family reunions, and large-scale parties, thus providing a source of revenue managed through the VCTC. Capacity-wise, the depot should compare closely to Piper's, and its rustic ambiance offers a great contrast to the grandeurs of Piper's. Should the Tunnel 6 project reboot, the freight depot would make the most logical sense for the Northern V&T Railroad terminus. Benefits include a shortened travel to the center of town, greater visibility toward and from C Street, ample parking, and adjacency to the largest lodging facility in Virginia City, that being the Soberland. For those reasons and more, as the chairman of the Board of County Commissioners, I recommend approval. And when the question was brought to me most recently about, well, when we're doing special events, we've got Pipers for weddings and for concerts, and that's all well and good. But if you want to go ahead and have two events running simultaneously, now you're stuck because you don't have two large locations where you can do this. I just think this is another piece of our puzzle up here. I feel as a resident and a community leader that it's our responsibility to look after these grand old ladies, as I like to call them. It's up to us to preserve and protect these properties, and I think we've done a marvelous job on what we've done so far with the buildings that the county has under its umbrella right now. So, commissioners, I look forward to your input on this.
Personally, I've looked into it. I think we generate about $4,200 in property tax off that property. I think the amount of revenue that we'd bring in with tourism would far exceed that. So in this particular case, I would support this purchase.
Hey, Jerry?
Not sure about the tunnel, but that's a different discussion.
Right, that's a different discussion down the road.
It's a good discussion to have. If that ended up bringing all these tourists in by rail and we had a depot down there in a receiving area, but I see so many other, it's in the center of town, there's so many opportunities. I see bus tours coming in and landing there. I think there's over 300 parking places that we can add to our community. I'd love to see a transportation system implemented whereby we can take our tourists from there up and onto C Street and toward the community. I just think it's an asset that we can use in so many ways, and I do absolutely support the purchase.
I want to continue on with this just a little bit, as I do have a little bit of history of being in business here over the course of years, and parking has always been an issue here, and this town fills up, and as we increase more parking around town, it fills up. And so to create more parking, what that does is that's going to generate more sales tax revenue, which the county and tourism will benefit from, and the Railroad Commission will benefit from as well. And then the more people that we can generate to stay here, that's going to give us more hotel room sales, which is going to go ahead and increase the tax base for tourism as well. I know from experience that when all the parking spaces are filled and people can't find a place, they just keep on going. They don't stop. They don't search any harder than they have to. But if we had adequate parking down there and we have adequate signage to get people there and an adequate transportation system to get them up on C Street, I think it's going to be a home run. As we see that our population is growing more elderly, and they have ambulatory problems. To park three streets away from the main district, I think it'd be difficult for those who might be compromised. But if we can help them out by providing transportation, I just see this as a win-win. And plus, by the county acquiring this, the building's in dire need of a new roof, whether it be wood or metal or whatever it is. But it needs a fire suppression system, which we've done with all of our other county buildings. And I think it's very important because that's a building in town we don't want to lose, because it's like the rest of them. It would be irreplaceable financially. There's just no way we could replace that building if we lost it.
You know, I tail on to that. I have a home here in Virginia City, and I think one of the issues that's worth looking at is when we have large crowds, every residential street is packed with cars, and our streets are not that wide. So there's a safety issue in that. A lot of the residents are concerned about people parking in front of their trash areas or their driveways or their security services, all types of parking problems. And so I see the more that we can do as a community, since we are a community that's based on tourism, the better job we can do with our parking, the more help we're giving to the local residents in the community by relieving some of the congestion on our private streets that really aren't designed to have all of that parking along the apron. So there are so many positive reasons, I think, for this acquisition.
I agree. Okay. With that, if I can go ahead and open this for public comment. All kinds of hands. Look, Ms. Bard, you had your hand up first.
Nicole Bard, Story County resident. I haven't added it all up yet, and I will as I write my blog post, but one thing I'd like to say is that these are all purchases done outside of a capital project plan or an infrastructure plan. I've been asking for that. This is my sixth or seventh request to see it. But in the last year, or in the last couple of years, we've spent money buying the fairgrounds. We've bought, prior to that in 2014, we bought Black and Howell. We've bought Pipers, you know, some of the things that you have mentioned, Marshall. All of that is investment here in Virginia City. What about the rest of the county? A lot of money is getting poured into Virginia City, and I don't see that the Highlands has its community center. I don't see it on the calendar and being worked on right now. So my first comment is, what about the rest of us? You've invested a great deal of money in D.C. What about the rest of the county? Now, having said that, I agree. I agree with the Pipers purchase. I agree that the fairgrounds purchase was a good one, you know, for those reasons. But at some point, you've got to start investing in the rest of the county. I don't see that happening. The second thing is, and both Lance and Marshall have mentioned this, and that is that we have a public transportation problem. Regardless of whether it's current residents or tourists, getting from parking 2 to 3 streets down up to C Street or even up higher down to C Street is an issue. I think from a priority standpoint that what we may want to do is look at pumping some of this money into a solution that has been talked about since I've been here for 10, 12 years and probably longer, and that is we need a mini public transportation system, which says that people can go ahead and park at the fairgrounds and you can bus them to C Street.
Let's hold on for about 20 seconds or so.
So in the absence
of... Hold on.
So, in the absence of a capital projects list or an infrastructure list where things get prioritized, these purchases are happening because they're opportunistic, and I think that our residents might give you inputs that other things are more important. ADA accommodation on C Street is one. Jay knows this because this has been a topic of a conversation on the Highlands chat list in terms of there's no handicap parking for our residents. Or our tourists. Isn't that a priority to get done? Transportation, I mentioned, was a priority. The other two things I have to say is I recall that NRS, and actually Witten said this in the purchase for the divide, the appraisal needs to be a 6-month-old appraisal. And what I see in the packet is a couple of years old. So my question is, how are you going forward with this, with that number, in the absence of a current appraisal? And then my next comment is the ancient memorandum of understanding between the county and the VMT Rail Commission at one time had $250,000 earmarked to support the purchase of the freight depot should it happen. And I don't know what has happened to those monies. Are those monies part of the county's money to pay for the $695,000 purchase price or what? So... just those comments. Obviously, I'm going to answer any questions.
Thank you. Mr. Ayers.
Thank you. Good morning again, Steve Air Local. As you know, I've been working with Pierce for the last couple of years on this, trying to get this through and make sure everybody's happy and know I'm not getting paid for any of this because Pierce is an old friend. So I think it's a great thing. We got to preserve these old buildings. And when you talk about the other areas, it's kind of apples and oranges because we don't have any historic structures out in the Highlands. We don't have them at the other end of the county. These buildings are special. We need to save them. We should have been saving all the mill buildings and all the sides have been blown off and everything else. Why that hasn't been done, I don't know. But that's just such a great location. And if you haven't been in there, you really need to see it because it's original. Everything's in there. Scales. The ticket office. It's just, it's amazing what he's done and been able to preserve the building for this long. And I know Pierce's biggest concern, he loves that building. That's just, the V&T is him. And that's his thing. We spoke this morning, Marshall, about the SHPO is a way to preserve the building and to be done in the future. Is there anything in writing or are there any guidelines on that that I could go back down? Because I did talk to Pierce before I came up, and his concern is still, well, I want it historic, and I don't know that that'll work, and I'm sure that there are some guidelines or something you can provide. So I could just assure him that, hey, yeah, the building is going to be done historically and not hodgepodge.
Steve, just like everything else in the Comstock Historic District, everything done to the exterior of a building has to go through the process of approval through the board. And of course, Bert is staff of that board. I sit on that board along with several others. And that things that would be changed in the interior are going to be different. You're going to have modern bathrooms, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
You just can't put in, you know, the stuff that they had in the 1800s. It's not going to be acceptable. So.
No troughs.
But, you know, it's always the county's intention to do everything that's going to be period correct, you know. But some things are going to be outside the realm for public safety. I mean, they didn't have sprinkler systems in the old days, and that building's going to require a sprinkler system.
Yeah.
They didn't have the heat they used in the old days. If they had heat in that building, would have been wood or coal stoves, and that's not going to be acceptable any longer.
Yeah, and it still is. It's amazing when you walk back in time in that building.
Right.
So,
but it's the intention for this board to go ahead and keep everything as authentic as possible.
Okay, yeah, that sounds great. Yeah. I'm just trying to allay his fears on that.
Right, yeah. Thanks for being part of the mediators on this, too, Steve.
It's what I do.
Great, thank you.
Elaine?
Elaine Barkdahl Spencer, V&T Railway. I like what I was hearing today, especially when you all addressed the aging tourist, the aging population. That's one of our biggest challenges at V&T Railway is finding ways for people to board the train to get them here. But once they get to Virginia City, it's how do they get their scooters uptown. And some of these scooters are getting bigger and larger. Where do we park? What's the easiest street to make your way up to C Street? So a lot of our people in wheelchairs right now or in the large scooters, some of them are able to take the shuttle. But right now we have a problem where the lift can't lift some of these larger scooters. So hearing you talk about additional parking and maybe staging areas for the passengers on these trains is a good idea. And how they can access Virginia City, that does need to be addressed, the handicap parking, all of that. We're addressing those challenges right now. We actually added an added service at the depot where we will put their scooters and their larger mobility devices in the back of a haul trailer, and we bring them up here for the passengers. But the trains can only handle, you know, so many certain sizes or different types and numbers of scooters. So we've had to find that solution. Again, the added parking, staging areas, that's going to benefit all of the tourists and the passengers of the V&T Railway. And enhancing the railroad experience, that also is something that would be very much appreciated.
Thank you, Elaine. Denny, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, and thanks again for the vote of confidence in regards to letting me lead the tourism department. It's nice to have a lot of arrows in your quiver when you're out there trying to get, or a lot of lures in your tackle box, rather, and trying to lure that big fish. One of our restrictions for many years has been having a place to put on like a rodeo or a large-scale event. And we got the fairgrounds, and it's starting to pay off. Another growing segment has been our arts and culture. We're able to pick up pipers. Now we're filling that venue. And what it's created is, which is a great thing, is a little bit of nightlife, which leads to that hotel room, which leads to additional tax revenue. But now we find ourselves competing, like you mentioned, Mr. McBride, competing events. Every year I lay out the calendar, and I'm trying to take into consideration our resources, whether they're fire, sheriff, public works, or just occupancy. And we have to move and shuffle things to certain weekends when it may be a better fit on a different weekend, but we don't have the facility. When I first read on the agenda and there was a potential deal for the Freight Depot, I smiled because that's a big lure for us in the tourism department. Having the ability to go after a convention or a group or a large-scale wedding, we can host more than 300, 220-ish seated for a dinner. We don't have that currently. Having that ability opens up the doors to a lot of potential for us. Not to mention what you all mentioned, the parking. Parking's big. And yes, we do need to improve some ways to move people around, and I continue to work on that. Just as a quick side note, most of the special event promoters, the ones that I work with directly, we actually kind of require or strongly suggest that they hire a shuttle of some type. And I got some other stuff that we're working on to help alleviate that as well. But again, I'm very excited that we're taking a look at this and could be a potential new venue for us because it opens the doors for a lot of people here in town.
Thank you, Dave. Okay, additional public comment.
Chair Commissioners, Clay Mitchell, Virginia City resident. I have some concerns, some misgivings, and I'll just list a few of them. So the first one is there was no discussion as the item was presented or in the written packet about what the master plan, which is our guiding document and zoning, have to say about the usage of this area. And I think that's part of the bigger concern that I have, that I'm concerned that if we shotgun off good ideas without the context of the bigger plan, we may miss the mark somewhat on getting the full benefit that we're looking for out of it. For example, I don't know if this Tunnel 6 extension is even a possibility, at what cost, what benefit, and the downside I see to if Tunnel 6 comes back, do we shoot ourselves in the foot because the master plan talks about a concentration of activity and attractions down along F Street as well that we're starting to build with the fairgrounds. We have the current depot and some of the other attractions down there. Does that pull the rug out from under if we move the train to a place that still doesn't quite get people to C Street but brings them closer to the downtown area? I certainly don't dispute the need for more parking, but is a large blacktop down in that area, which is particularly visible from Main Street, from C Street, is that the right place? On the other side, a lot of the parking that's kind of tucked up against the back of C Street is not as visible because you're looking out over it, but that's a big stretch, especially when you add it to the parking that the Silverland already has. And so you've got viewshed issues where potentially you're taking away from the authenticity factor because you're putting a big parking facility in a place that's very visible and prime real estate for expansion off of the main C Street corridor. And I just think without a comprehensive transportation plan to properly guide the development of the transportation facilities and infrastructure we need, I'm not sure if that's the right move to make without having fully looked at all those impacts. since I have a vested interest in Gold Hill, and I wonder about the Gold Hill Depot, which is somewhat similar. I'm curious how much usage it actually gets. I think that was one of the big reasons to take back control of it, make the improvements. And I'm not aware of a lot of events and other things that happen down there. It has pretty substantial parking. Potential revenue is one of the reasons given to make this decision. What is it doing for us? And how can we maximize an asset we already have that, in my opinion, is totally underused? Maybe not at the same scale as this facility, but still it's a good-sized facility, and we've done an event or two there, and it has the ability to offer something that a lot of the other places don't here in town. I don't think we're using it. I think the bigger question that really troubles me is, what exactly is the role of the county in taking on the operations of more building and facilities? I understand the role from a historic preservation perspective, and that private owners have limited resources to do what's needed to keep up these buildings. It's a huge burden that we bear as a community. We don't have a huge population base to draw from philanthropically to support all of these assets that we have, and yet we've got more than your average town of these historic structures. But what exactly is the role of the county in doing that? Do we just keep going and going and going, or at what point do we say that's enough? I think to sum it up, without the guidance of a comprehensive, you know, I've been spending a lot of brain power, it's probably not worth much, but a lot of brain power on trying to figure out the transportation stuff. I've been to a lot of meetings recently, and transportation is one of the top subjects of discussion among our senior community and those who provide services for them, among the tourism community. It's a constant issue with tourism. We just heard today that it's an issue with the children's programs down at the community center, that transportation is a limiting factor for them. And I really feel like that should be the very first priority, that a comprehensive transportation plan that not only gets people up here to town and back out of town, but around town, is crucial before making big investments and big decisions. For those reasons, I would state my opposition to this particular item at this time. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Sure, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. There's two things I'd like. We can wait. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Stan, you want to sit down and wait?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Sure. Okay. So two areas I'll talk about, if you'd like, Mr. Chairman, is one is the master plan, and two is another item with regard to infrastructure in other parts of the county. So the master plan, this freight depot is one of the most supported things in the master plan. It's supported in the land use chapter, it's supported in the transportation chapter, it's supported in the cultural resources chapter, and it's repeated throughout the entire master plan as a parking venue, as a master transportation hub. It's a multimodal hub for not just the train, but getting people out of their cars, off of C Street, off of the residential corridors, and into trolleys. We had talked about potential inclinator going back and forth between there, where people could come up to C Street and not have to negotiate the parking challenges throughout town. As discussed, as a visitor's element for tourism and economic development, it's discussed as a center for culturalism, not just maintaining the building, but using the building as a place that people can come and experience something authentic, doing an authentic activity, such as a ball or a dance or an event or a conference or getting off the train and on the train or any kinds of events that could happen in that place. The master plan does reference, despite its antiquity, a 1990s comprehensive parking and transportation analysis that was done for Virginia City, and that analysis talks about this exact same thing, getting the cars off of C Street and clustering parking in exterior areas within and close to the downtown area of Virginia City, and then using some kind of a transit system or systems to get people in and around town, get them out of their cars, and get the cars off of C Street. That plan is still valid today, and the master plan explains why it's still valid today. And ADA respect is still addressed in there as well. So this is one property in Virginia City. Again, I'm reiterating, is not just strongly supported, but you will see it repeated again and again and again throughout the master plan. If you would like, I'll just make a note, maybe after Mr. Toll's public comment on another item with regard to infrastructure, if you would like.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead,
Thank you, Commissioner McBride. For the record, Sam Toll, Gold Hill Native. I think this opportunity represents a lot of upside for the community. As you've talked about just now, Mr. Osborne, the fact that parking is a huge issue. Getting people around is a big deal. Anybody who's been to Market Street in San Francisco and watched the cable cars get to the bottom of the hill and do a 180 so they can head back up, recognizes the potential that this site has to put a roundabout for the train should we poke a hole through the tunnel. I think that there's a lot of upsides. The fact that that Mr. Powell is now a willing participant and we're not using the coercion of eminent domain, I think that there's a lot of reasons for this to move forward. One of the things to consider, I know that we've got a lot invested in the fairgrounds, but I've talked to 70 merchants, and if there's one thing that they all talk about in terms of what would make the town better, moving the center of focus from the fairgrounds back to where it used to be, there down at MD Street, is something that all of them, I think, would be able to support. So I think that now that Mr. Powell is willing to sell and there's a price that's agreeable to both parties, I think this is a good idea moving forward. So I'm gonna encourage you to vote for yes on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Additional public comment? Point out that we have the chairman of the board of the Railroad Commission with us today too, Mr. Thomas. Thank you for attending today.
For the record, I'm Stan Jones, chairman of the V&T Railroad Commission. We're excited to support this. This is, to us, one more piece of the puzzle put in place. There's still a lot of work before we'll ever see fruition, but it's a start, I think, in the right direction, and we certainly support your effort, Marshall. Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. I'd like to ask Mr. Gallagher if you would mind coming up and enlightening the audience on the different funding avenues that we will have for this project.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hugh Gallagher, Story County Comptroller. Within the funding mechanisms that we can use to go ahead and proceed, should you vote to proceed with the purchase, we have various option items. We have, obviously, we've got the V&T Railroad bond issue that we have that I didn't see anything that completely restricted it from go ahead and buying or purchasing the Gold Hill Freight Depot. We have, as we've had before, the V&T option tax. That was for the operations and of the V&T Railway. We have what we call Toys R Us, and as you remember, several years ago, Toys R Us didn't fulfill our obligation to the state of Nevada or to GOED, and were fined about $235 for that. All that is a project that we can earmark for part of that.
Could you read that number again?
It's about $235,000.
Yeah, it's $235.
But that was it dollars?
Yeah.
And we still have funds in our capital project fund. So this is doable. And from a various number of reasons, we'll just figure out which one we need to do.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. And you had a follow-up on this, Mr. Osborne?
If you want, Mr. Chairman, if you think appropriate, I'd just like to just one word each list some of the projects that are being done in other parts of the county under the direction of this board.
Sure.
All right. I'm just going to make it very simple, But it's a good comment to understand, as you know, our other projects throughout the other parts of the county being done, and under the direction of this board, here's just a few. In the Virginia City Highlands, there is renewed conversations going on about a community center in the Highlands. It is very possible that under this board's direction, if it should so desire, which I believe it will, based on our conversations, is that there will be some movement on that happening very soon. The other one is the Cartwright Road. We're going through the process of making that where the county will maintain it and improve it. Last Town Road with the same thing. The Highlands has experienced the fourth year of the United States Geological Survey of well water and underground water resources at partially 50% of the county's expense. The Virginia City Highlands Marlette Water Study taking our part and extending it to other parts of the county, including the Highlands and Mark Twain. Down in Lockwood, the Perry Ranch Road re-improvement and county taking over for maintenance and reconstruction. The Lockwood Community Center, the Lockwood Flood Project, the Mark Twain Flood Project, and culverts in Mark Twain that are exclusive from the flood project. I just think those are a couple things that should be noted. In addition, I have talked with Comptroller Gallagher and our team, and under the direction of this board, we will begin an actual capital improvement plan that will be working through with a strategic plan if the board decides to go that direction with a strategic plan. So those are just a few things that are going on around the county. And it should be noted that one of the limiting factors at the Gold Hill Depot right now, not allowing larger events, is property ownership challenges and parking limitations. Despite all the land, it's not necessarily owned by us, and we are looking at that as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Austin. With that, I think with Austin's explanations and the information from Mr. Gallagher, I think that answers a lot of the questions that have been asked at the podium today. So feel free to go ahead and stick around after the meeting. You can ask more questions about it. And I'll open up one more time for public comment if anybody didn't get a chance to make their way to the podium. Okay, seeing none, at this time, though, I'd like to ask for a motion to approve this agreement.
I, Lance Gilman, will move to approve the contract to purchase the Virginia City Freight Depot and adjacent properties in Virginia City, Nevada, from David Pierce Powell and Terry Ward for a cash purchase price of $695,000.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Moved and second. Approve the contract to purchase the VNC Freight Depot for $695,000. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right, moving along now to item number 14. This is a public hearing. Review, establish, and possibly approve the fair market value at no less than the appraised value for the sale of the Crystal Bar, which is the current visitor center, located at 86 South C Street in Virginia City, per guidelines established in NRS 244.281. Mr. Dotson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Danny Dotson. Just as a reminder, this is a continuation item that we had from, I believe, in May on the request of the commissioners to bring you all some additional information in regards to what would we do if we did sell the Crystal Bar. Now, I will remind you that today we really just need to come up with an approval on a no less than sale price. It does not mean that we are going to sell the Crystal. This gives us some options by setting that price before the appraisal expires. So with that, we have some in your packet some options. As per the request, there is a design, there are some cost estimates on what it would be for a new facility. These are just some ballpark estimates that I had Pete Dubai put together for us. Again, they're just ballpark. Comes in at about 1.4. To totally redo them and build a new interpretive type visitor center. I also had Mr. Gallagher over the last week pull some information on what would it cost to just refinance a construction loan for the Crystal. For the Black and Howell building. So in other words, do we sell the Crystal if we get the fair price, which would come with a couple of restrictions? Number one, the covenants does carry over if we were to find someone that wanted to buy that. Number two, we would need to be to lease it back to that from that individual, so we had time to build a new visitor center. The other option would be to just go ahead and outright build a new visitor center, which I think there's some USDA-type loans and some other financing options that Hugh, I don't know if you want to talk about it now at this point, but if you had a question, we could bring him up. But really, today was just to establish the $385,000 as a no less than. From there, we have options.
As I mentioned at the last time that we heard this, that I was a little bit disappointed in the appraisal. I thought it came in kind of low, considering what some of the other properties around town have sold for. To take into consideration that Crystal doesn't go from C Street all the way back to B Street, though there is a lot behind it that I believe is owned by AmeriGas, where they have some fuel tanks that are storage fuel tanks that are back there. So that might be one of the reasons why the appraisal came in a little bit lower than I would have liked to have seen. It's on a major corner, you know, in the middle of Virginia City. There's only two really major corners, this one and the one down by the Delta and the Bucket of Blood. Going forward, I'd always like to see the new community center built on the property where the Black and Howe building sits, because I thought that it would be maybe more appropriate to have a newer building when you want to provide restroom facilities for your visitors. I mean, the Crystal was adequate when it was a mom-and-pop saloon, having two very small restrooms. I always thought that by having maybe a back porch of some type where people could take photographs of the churches, which are probably especially St. Mary's is probably the most photographed building in Virginia City. I thought by looking at that Black and Howe building site, I mean, that building was there throughout all of my youth, and I think it was torn down about 20 or 25 years ago. When set vacant all those years, no one had any interest in that site, even though it's a great location. Probably because of the fact that by buying the property and having to erect a new building, they probably have a hard time figuring out how to make any money in a retail location. Julie Lope, or later on become Julie Carno, who started Grandma's Fudge here in town, she purchased that lot many years ago and just sat on it. So I always thought it would be a good idea to put a new building there and then actually sell the Crystal Bar and put it back into private ownership so we'd get it back on the tax rolls, and then we would have a new and improved visitor center and on a basically vacant lot that has been vacant for all of these years with no real thought that anybody else is going to come along and utilize it. So I like the idea of having this to sell not less than the appraised price on this. Going forward, though, we'd have to do a little bit more research on building a new building. But as Denny pointed out, I think if we were to sell it, we would have to lease it back for a period of time to build a new structure, unless we wanted to just outright finance a new structure and then worry about selling it later on, when perhaps if the real estate market is stronger, then perhaps we can sell it for more money than what is currently being priced for. That's pretty much all I have on the subject for now.
I'm comfortable with the price. I think we should sell it. I mean, obviously, Denny's going to need a place to live. The BCTC will need a place to live if we do end up constructing something. So the sale might be a little complicated, but I'd like to get it back off our hands and back into the private sector.
It's a beautiful historic saloon. This mystery clock on the wall.
Circling back to your comments, I'm not sure I understand the language, and I want to make sure your comments were that we would have the opportunity in the future of selling it for more. Then we're, as I understand it, all we're approving here today is that the appraised value of $385,000 is acceptable to the commission. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes. But that the way this reads to me is approved for the sale of. And I'd like maybe to have our council to address that language. We're not approving the sale of the building today, correct? We're just approving the value of the appraisal.
That's correct. I think that what if my understanding of it with Mr. Dotson is that all the appraisal, if we don't lock in an amount, we're going to lose that and have to start all over again. So all we're doing today is establishing this as the appraisal price as part of a piece of the puzzle that is going to go forward, correct?
That is absolutely correct. And one other thing I might just add, we do not have to sell it at this point. By waiting and just starting construction on the Crystal, we could potentially build that building and then lease the Crystal out for a couple years, thus expiration of the covenants, which would at that time make it potentially a little easier to sell. Also, the price could go back up at that time. So if we had a couple year grace period, it might work to our advantage.
Well, I'd just like to make certain from my chair that we're not approving the sale.
No.
And so do we need to adjust the language as the way this recommended motion is presented to them?
Yeah, because all we're doing is protecting the appraisal value. So
approve the fair market
so it's
value.
Not approved for the sale. It's approved for...
It would be approved for the sale, not approved the sale. I think you're okay.
And I think that Mr. Osborne's right, because it's approved for the sale, but within the guidelines of not less than the appraised value.
So are we adjusting the motion?
I think the way that it's approved for the sale, not approved the sale.
If the property were to be sold, this would be the base.
Well, all we're doing at this point is we're protecting the appraisal.
So we're all in agreement on the record that we're not approving this sale today
no.
at that price. We're only approving the appraised value.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Of not less than this amount.
Yeah, of not less.
Less. At that point,
which I agree with you is too low.
Yeah.
At that point, Mr. Gilman, I believe we would certainly come back. If we do put it up for sale and had an offer, we would come back for discussion and approval here at this board. Before moving forward.
And you could accept coming to this board because it's at this amount.
Correct. Yeah.
Why don't we just put approve the appraisal amount?
I like that. We'll just
because why do we need
amount.
To put it's not we're not doing it for sale. So approve let's see the appraisal amount. Yeah. So if we do approve the appraisal amount. Of the Crystal Bar per the guidelines at not less than the appraised value of. And that way we take the word sale completely out of it.
Would you want to put on the end of it for the purpose of determining future
no.
sale?
Okay. Actually, no. Thank you.
So let me see if I get this right. Approve the appraisal amount of the Crystal Bar Visitor Center located at, et cetera, Virginia City, per guidelines established in NRS. At not less than the appraised value of $385.
That's correct.
That's proper.
Because
language.
I think when you're talking about the appraisal amount, you know that eventually you might be talking about a sale, and we'll address that issue when it comes up. That's not what we're doing today.
Perfect. I like that. Anybody else?
All right. How about if we go ahead and open up for public comment? Sister Ayers.
Alderman, Steve Ayers, local. Just from a real estate perspective, I'm not used to working with counties on this kind of stuff because I think you're shooting yourself in the foot if you get an appraisal up front. Appraisers in my business, you come in with a value. I come in and I tell you your building's worth $400. We find a buyer that's willing to pay $430, $450, whatever. Then the appraisal's done. And the way appraisals work is appraisers look at what somebody's willing to pay, and then they justify that amount. So if you lay out there that it's $368,000 or whatever your number was, that's what it's going to sell for. It's not going to sell for more. So that just kind of befuddles me because I think you're going to get a lot more money out of the building Unless that's a legal thing. I don't know, because normally you do the appraisal after you have somebody come in with an offer. The other part, now, did I misunderstand this? You're talking about deed restricting the property somewhat so that if it's bought, they would have to do a certain kind of business or?
No, there's a deed restriction right now. There's covenants on the building through SHPO, the state agency that I talked to you about before. There can't be any changes to make to these items until after December 31st of 2023 because there's so many years on these covenants. So it'd be in the best interest for a seller to lease it back to the county because they wouldn't be able to make any changes until after the covenants expired.
Okay, because I've sold a number of the buildings up here over the past, and with the people that I've seen come in and buy, they're not going to be dictated to. People come up here, they fall in love with a town. By George, I'm going to put in a bookstore. I'm going to put in this. I'm going to put that. And if you tell them, we want you to buy the building and lease it back to us, I haven't seen that buyer yet, especially in this community. So that's another major limitation.
There should be nothing of what type of business they could operate that was legal. It's simply alterations to the building that SHPO had approved because they'd given money to the county to make these improvements.
Is that physical outside then or inside? Or?
It could be either or. Yeah.
Okay, because I think your best buyer is going to be the one that's not going to have, I mean, the historical restrictions, I guess, but the other restrictions of.
That for any public sale of a building, you have to have the appraisal up front.
You do?
Yeah.
Wow. It's a good way to buy property at a discount.
Well.
Because appraisals are always low.
Okay.
Thank you, Steve. All right, additional public comment.
Clay Mitchell, Virginia City resident. You know, in the private sector, time is your enemy when you're looking at doing something new or a project. And if the decision is made that this is the right way forward for the VCTC and their new facility, I think there's no point in delaying. I think opening up the options is the right thing to do as quickly as possible. Because right now we're sitting on two properties, one developed, one not developed. And if we need the better facilities, and that's going to benefit the town. Let's move forward and do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. Additional public comment?
Mr. McBride, if I may add just one thing. There was a few comments in the past over the last month or so why we may need a new visitor center. One of the first impressions you get when you travel is basically the first person you talk to, the first place you stop, the restroom you use. All these things kind of influence, you know, whether or not you like this place or you want to come back or you want to be an ambassador for this place. Having a location, not that the Crystal Bar isn't wonderful, because it is, having a location that people can come in and get the treasure map to go out and hunt and have all the information that they need to spend their day, to spend their money. Having multiple restrooms, in the visitor center, our inventory has grown quite a bit over the last few years, namely Cemetery Gin. We don't have a storage room. You know, there's nothing that we can do. We have outgrown that place, and it's not really, as you take a look at other visitor centers, a lot of them are designed with circular desks so you can handle and talk to most people. They're not designed like a bar. So that it does have the challenges when you're wanting to interact and answer questions from multiple people, which we do get, obviously, like this time of year. It's very, very busy. So there's some things that are very challenging, even though it's a wonderful little visitor center, having the ability to start people off in the right way for their day is would be wonderful. So
all right. Thanks, Danny. Okay, Commissioner Gillen, do you have a motion prepared?
I do. I move to approve the appraisal amount of the Crystal Bar Visitor Center located at 86 South C Street in Virginia City per guidelines established in NRS 244.281 at not less than the appraised value of $385,000.
Yes. I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Moved to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right. Moving along to item number. Thank you, Denny. Moving along to item number 15, discussion of possible action
Approval of modification and extension of collective bargaining agreement between Story County, who's the employer, and the Story County Employees Association, ask me, Local 4041, Comstock Chapter, which is the union. Mr. Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioners. What you have in front of you is a tentative agreement between the county and the General Employees Association. Essentially, what we're looking at is finishing off the 2016-19 contract, and this would be a proposal for a three-year contract being 2019 to 2022. These are essentially the amended changes from 30,000 feet or maybe even 5,000 feet, and the details, of course, are provided in the packet. Essentially, salaries for the employees would stay the same, except there would be a COLA, cost of living increase, in the form of a chart adjustment, 2% for year one, 2% for year two, 2% for year three. Capped employees, those are employees that have been at or above step 10, and there's no more steps left. On year two only, they would receive an additional 2.5% adjustment. Just note that these steps between normally are 3.5%. Step grades are the same. There is a, for an employee to, in order to go from a step to another step on his or her anniversary date, that employee has to be evaluated by the department head and pass the evaluation. In the current contract, if the employee does not pass the evaluation, they have 6 months to improve through a personnel improvement plan. The new contract extends that to 6 months. Community development will have some career path adjustment in order that is commensurate with certifications and years of experience in both the building inspector series as well as the fire inspector series. There is a provision in here that on year three only, that there are certain positions that would be comp studied to make sure that they are paid appropriately with regard to the region and other factors. If that comp study results in some adjustment to those certain positions, then it would be up to the board to reconsider adjusting those positions only in the contract and only for year three. If that study finds that everything is fine the way it is, then it would not adjust. Those positions are the heavy equipment operators, the appraiser series, the 911 dispatchers, and the community development building inspectors and fire inspectors. There was some minor adjustment to vacation accrual. That accrual rate now is commensurate with the region. Sick leave is now commensurate with the region at separation. There's some payoff at separation when an employee leaves. There is an adjustment to military leave. Essentially, instead of in hour increments, it can be in quarter day increments. Let me take that back. Instead of day long increments, it could be quarter long increments. Some employees that take military leave, it doesn't take a whole day. They didn't want to take a whole day off. They wanted to come back to work at noon or whenever they were done with their short assignment. There's some adjustments to uniforms that provide steel toe boots and other protective equipment for inspectors, roads, and facilities, which is totally appropriate. And then the rest of it really is cleanup and adjustment throughout the contract of better language, including the grievance procedure. I just want to thank all of the members on our team, such as Jennifer and Hugh and Jesse, that were at the table through the whole time. And each of us provided something valuable to the table, so we came completely ready and prepared with data and background. And I want to thank really the union president and the membership as well for being reasonable and being professional and bargaining in good faith through this process, as this group always does.
All right. Thank you, Austin. Any public comment regarding this item? Any follow-up questions for Austin?
You already go. Went over all that.
I think it's all been said.
Yeah, I think so, too. Get a motion to approve?
In accordance with the recommendation by staff and the tentative agreement between Story County Employer and the Story County Employees Association, AFSCME, Local 4041, Comstock Chapter Union, I, Lance Gilman, hereby motion to approve the 2019-2022 collective bargaining agreement between the parties.
All right, I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
We move to second to approve this modification extension of the collective bargaining agreement. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right, we've already agreed to continue item number 16 and 17, which brings us up to item number 18 for discussion and possible action. Possible approval of interlocal agreement with Carson City to have the Carson City Public Guardian also act as a public guardian for Story County at a rate of $150 per hour. Ms. Langer.
Well, I guess it is good afternoon. Ann Langer, Story County District Attorney. I was here a couple months ago talking about the public guardian position that we did find out during the course of a particular case that the person that we believed to be the public guardian was, in fact, not. So Pat Whitten was approved as the temporary public guardian while we figured out the situation. What had happened in the past with Story County is that there was a flat fee, and I think that that's when Bill Maddox came into office. The last agreement I saw was in 2014, where they wanted a flat fee of $25,000. And from there, we've never had a public guardian from 2014 forward. So, because we didn't need one. These cases, and I hate to say something like this, because then, of course, that's when things pick up. You say these cases are few and far between. But in light of another case that came forward, we realized that per statute, we shall have a public guardian. And this was the agreement that we'd had before. I think the most important thing in having the Carson City Public Guardian be our public guardian, it's a very specialized position. And so it's going to be more cost effective to have a person that is actually in the job to be able to do our cases that come few and far between than try to have somebody appointed as the public guardian or pay that person to be the public guardian in our town when somebody is already in a specialized position for this. So my recommendation would be that to enter the agreement, the interlocutory agreement with Story County and Carson City.
Okay, is there a time frame on this, or does this go on to infinity?
No, this once we enter into this, it goes straight over, and then my counterpart in Carson City is going to take this before the board, probably within the next month.
Okay.
Any questions?
No, ma'am.
Okay. We're cut and dry. Is there any public comment regarding this item? Need a motion to approve?
I, Lance Gelman, Commissioner, move to approve the interlocal agreement between Carson City and Story County for the provision of public guardian services by Carson City on behalf of Story County.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Moved and second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries unanimously. All right. We've continued item number 19, and we're going to move on to item number 20. Discussion of possible action, resolution number 19-547, a resolution setting grade and salary range of employees fixed by ordinance or resolution per NRS 245.045 for appointed Story County officials for the 2019-2020 fiscal year and amending prior year action by resolution for appointed Story County officials for the 2018-2019 fiscal period by adding and assigning salary grade to Assistant Comptroller. Mr. Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. NRS 245.045 explains that the board sets the salaries for appointed staff. And in this case, the adjustments are coming from the last resolution last year, and they are really as follows. Essentially what we're doing here is we're aligning some of the positions commensurate with the duties of those department heads and other appointed officials that have changed. There has been, for example, a downgrade of the grade of the administrative officer from a 151 to a 144, and the purpose of that is because that administrative officer will no longer do HR labor relations. They'll only do regular HR operations. That's an example. There's other changes in here, such as we have added an event site manager This is the person that has reorganized, that runs Piper's Opera House and works for the VCTC, but also does other museum and other types of venues for the purpose of tourism and cultural resources. The Senior Center Site Manager for Lockwood is a position that will be worked with Sherry Nevin and her team on restructuring. Sherry Nevin, as far as a community relations coordinator, there are adjustments and additions to what she's doing, so there's adjustment there. And then there are the movement of one grade for certain high-level department head positions to try to get them at least into the region of what goes on. But it is noted that the department heads and elected or appointed officials in the county, we are what they call a lagging organization. It's a bit on the low side, which is fine because there are certain responsibilities that the larger organizations have, like Reno or Sparks, that we don't. And then there's a second part of this following a comp study and a lengthy process assigning to one position in the prior year period. There would be an adjustment in the prior year period for that one position. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. By the way, I'd like to add, all of this has been budgeted for and was included in the final budget approved by the board.
Great. Thanks, Austin. Commissioners, have any questions for Austin regarding this?
No, sir.
No.
All righty. Open up for public comment. Hearing none. Get a motion to approve.
I, Commissioner, move to approve resolution number 19-547, a resolution setting grade and salary range of employees fixed by ordinance or resolution per NRS 245.045 for appointed Story County officials for the 2019-2020 fiscal year, and amending prior year action by resolution for appointed Story County officials for the 2018-2019 fiscal period by adding and assigning salary grades to Assistant Comptroller.
I have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Moving to second to approve resolution 19-547. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Motion carries. Sure. Let's go ahead and take about a 5-minute recess.
We didn't have to run.